It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strangechamps. There's an ancient tradition practiced every year by small groups of people in England at night. What time is it?
Well, we usually move at around 11 o'clock, maybe just before, so darkness will have completely enveloped the land.
This is musician Sam Lee. He leads nightingale tours.
We gather up, and yes, we're doing it in company. There's a group of us, about 40 of us. We don't use torches. We do it in silence, and we walk in single file through the woods, down these paths. It's another world. However much you know the forest, when in the darkness, this completely different personality of the land emerges. People become like little kids, you know, 75-year-olds are like giggling, tremoring with excitement. The air quality, the sound quality, the movement of creatures, the birdsong that isn't there, something changes. There's this extraordinary stillness. You become not a modern person, you become animal. You know, if you switch the light on, you realize this is the easiest walk in the world. But what we go through actually having to outsource our trust is such a massive thing. Because we as a species don't walk in the dark anymore. It's been banished. The dark has been banished from our lives.
You know, on the one hand, this sounds like such a simple thing, going for a walk at night. But in pure, uninterrupted natural darkness, with no artificial light anywhere, that is actually hard to find. Half of life on Earth happens at night. So what did we lose when we lost touch with the planet's ancient nocturnal rhythms? What did we forget? This hour, maybe it's time to reclaim the night. Welcome to the next episode of our series on Deep Time. Okay, so let me back up for a sec. This series on Deep Time is an invitation to explore life beyond the clock, to get past that giant second hand in your head with its relentless countdown of appointments and deadlines, to learn how to reconnect with natural ecologies of time. One way is to experience the night the way our great-great-grandparents did, in the fullness of the dark. That's what Sam Lee offers people. He's a folk singer and conservationist who runs an annual series of late-night concerts where he and other musicians improvise in the dark with a famously elusive bird, the nightingale. Is not taking lights so you don't scare off the birds?
No, not at all. They couldn't care
less.
No,
really? Oh, really? I just assumed.
When we get to the birds, yes, I would not like light there. But for 95% of the walk, we're nowhere near the birds. So the light is, and the refusal of light is about an invoking of our other senses.
I would imagine it makes a lot of people uncomfortable. I mean, don't you get people saying, no, just I need a little flashlight, so I can't do this without any light at all.
At certain points, if the walk takes a complicated moment, we will put red beam on, which doesn't affect night vision. But from the start of the walk, people are aching for it because this idea of doing something that is kind of forbidden. There's nowhere in our society that allows us to find yourself in a place is so rare that we would do that. It's the final frontier.
To me, this sounds like such an extraordinary experience to have without the reason you're there, which is the nightingale. You're there to hear a bird that is legendary, and there are only a few weeks a year you can listen, right?
Indeed. It's a momentary occurrence, like a lot of nature's great wonders. It's a blossom, it's a flourish, it's there, it's a spectacle. It's an expensive moment in nature's year. Mm. And it's for one singular purpose, and that is for the perpetuation of the species, to find a mate. And all usual rules of conduct cease to exist. So a bird that should be hiding away invisible suddenly doesn't matter. Allowing 40 people to come and sit right underneath you? Fine. Right now, I'm trying to find a female bird, and me singing is the most important thing in my life. That makes it a wonderful opportunity for us to be there, intimately part of that process, not interfering with it, not detrimental to it. That's a rare gift, because I think we have a crisis in our belief system that nature needs to be left alone and we are bad for nature.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a moment where we can go, actually, we are part of nature. We are a bit nightingale. Nightingale is a bit human. And for us to not be there and to have a night as glorious as the ones we are granted in spring, with the stars out and the blossom in the air and the twinkle of the stars and that tangible eruption of explosion of nature, to not be there and present, it's like the circus coming to town and you just not bothering to go, you know, the greatest
right.
show on earth.
You just stay home in front of Netflix.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So the thing that you do that is so beautiful that I want to talk more about is singing with the nightingales. You've invited other musicians to come and sing and play and basically make music with these birds. What was the inspiration? What even made you think of doing that?
I was inspired from the moment I heard nightingales to go and listen to them and made it my annual duty to find one. And I never missed a year. And sometimes it was quite by accident. I was like, oh my God, there's a nightingale. How lucky am I that I'm at the right place at the right time. You've got to be a bit of a night owl to have those encounters. But then I made a radio documentary for BBC honouring the 90th anniversary of a very iconic moment, which was when the BBC did the first ever live radio broadcast. And it happened in 1924 with a legendary cellist, Beatrice Harrison. And she convinced the BBC to try out this new technology in her back garden with her playing cello with her nightingale that she discovered by accident, by just indulging in the spring.
I used to wander about the garden, you know, with a cello at night. It was always a joy to me. And one night when I'd been playing for hours, I suddenly heard the note of the most heavenly bird. He used to sing in thirds with me, and it was such a joy. He used to twiddle about with he was always in tune with the cello, you know. And it struck me how lovely it would be if he could be broadcast. It was such a wonderful sensation, you know. And I had 50,000 letters.
Probably the first ever bit of viral media.
Wow.
It was to that time like the iPhone or the iPod or AI all together. Never had media been able to transmit singularly at the same time. And everyone phoned each other and said, get onto the radio, listen, listen, listen.
Beatrice Harrison was Elgar's favourite cellist, but it was her Nightingale concerts that the nation made a date with. They were broadcast from her garden every May the 19th. Until 1942, that night, an ominous bass note accompanied the Nightingale, and the BBC engineer recognised it as the drone of British bombers setting out. Thinking the broadcast would alert the enemy to the raid, he pulled the plug on the transmission, but kept on recording.
Do you remember the first time you yourself tried making any kind of music with the bird?
Yeah.
I have to think that was a life-changing experience.
Absolutely. There are these moments in one's life, and I'm sure we can all recall one, where something happens, a door is opened. You know it's a threshold, that there's no going back. There's no unknowing of that experience. And on that night, out in the thorn bush, daring to make music with this master musician, you know, I'd listen, but God, respond? Never. That, what an impertinent idea. As the Nightingale started to sing with us, this shudder, I remember this shudder of, oh my God, this is happening. I came out of that night, out of that experience, going, people have to experience this. People have to be here. As we sit there listening to a gorgeous musician with this bird, and we're lying in the grass and the stars are above us, there's this sense of, this is what we've done for 99% of our evolutionary journey. And it's only been in the blink of an eye, time-wise, that we've stepped away from this, we've rejected it and thought we could better it. What have we lost in that, stepping out of the scrub into those smelly, sticky-floored clubs and pubs and bars where we now gather?
We can't know, but do you think, do you suspect that people have been singing with animals for a really, really long time, like prehistory even?
I think about this a lot, and undermining your question, because I think it's a really important question. Why do we ask the question that way round? And not on the assumption that, of course, we've made music with the natural world, because we were always part of the natural world. We've been entirely evolved in accordance through our ears, and listening and communication has been adopted from the animal kingdom. At what point, generation by generation, did we stop bothering to do it? Thank you.
I'm talking with British folk singer, conservationist, and activist Sam Lee about his nighttime concerts with nightingales. Sam is pretty well known for collecting, restoring, and sharing the ancient folk music of the British Isles, which is not like what we call folk music in America. It's a much older tradition. And when you hear it sung in harmony with the birds, it's like stepping way back in time.
I thought she was an angel bride. I'm tripping down so low. Think I'm sad, I'm a country boy. And modest to me she plies, and I daily labor my bride down by the Tanya side.
The first time I heard one of your recordings, I mean, I got goosebumps. We're hearing some kind of cross-species intimacy, but it's also, there's a kind of presence. You're both very, very present. And I've puzzled over, like, what is that? How do you do that? I think it has to do with the musical tradition you're coming out of, but maybe not. What would you say?
I'm really touched that you hear that, and it's not something that I've connected before, perhaps, but the determination of a nightingale to sing in the darkness, in the silence, in the absence of anything else happening has a lot of, in one way, quite melancholic similarity to the art of being a folk singer. That solo, lonely voice, you know, out there alone. Folk music being a kind of declining tradition, and I've witnessed the age of extinction of the our old tradition bearers singing defiantly. Those old singers, knowing that they are alone and they are the last of their kind, There's a sort of tragedy in that and a beauty. Nightingales hold that, even though in many parts of the world they're doing fine. In England, they are going extinct very fast, disappearing at a terrifying rate. And I have such a familiarity with that, with being in the presence of those old singers in their 80s, sometimes 90s, singing these old songs, knowing that they are the last people to sing them. And I'm the last person to get to hear those songs. There's so many parallels.
I'll take that boy inside, and I'll roll him in my very own arms.
Grief is in there. Rage is also in there. And I think this is where art comes into its true power. It's a transmuter of those qualities. It digests, it ingests, and it converts that into heat and love.
Bye.
so much to be learnt from these birds.
Really? Like what?
To speak from a place of absolute truth, a sense of reverence, a sense of devotion, of gratitude. You know, I don't think these are all necessarily just human qualities.
And what about musical qualities?
Well, as I say, decoration. I mean, my God, and improvisation, the ability to... How does this bird choose what he chooses to sing? Every blast is a unique combination of sounds. We know there is a language within there. One day, and perhaps soon, we'll be able to find this out. AI is doing an extraordinary job of deciphering animal language. But right now, I am very clear that there is a conversation happening. What I observe in one bird over several nights with a different musician each night and a different group is the bird responds very differently. And I could tell you some extraordinary stories of when the birds have known absolutely what we're singing.
Tell me one. That's amazing.
Well, there's so many examples. So the one that I really love was one night there were two musicians that came. There was a woman who we'd booked, clarinetist. She'd brought a young protege who was a jazz singer, a girl of about 16. It was end of the season and the nightingales had been terrible weather. And this night, the birds were not being very cooperative, which happens about 3 or 4% of our shows. We probably have about 1 or 2 nights this happens of the 40 shows we do. And this was the bad night of the season. I knew where the bird was. He'd been singing the night before and we were sitting there and we were playing the clarinet and I was singing and very little was happening. And then the woman passed over to her young singer and said, "Would you like to sing a song?" And she started singing Nat King Cole's Nature Boy. There was a boy. Da, 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 da. And as she sang this song, silence, as we were just beautiful, listening to the song, it was just magic. You know, there she was, 16-year-old. She'd never been out of the city. She was an urban kid, grown up in like the projects of West London, never been out in nature before. This was a mind-blowing experience. And then it came to the line, "The greatest thing you'll ever learn is to be loved and loved in return." And as she sang the word return, the nightingale exploded into song.
Oh my God.
And the group gasped and then tears just fell from our faces. That was it.
Wow.
What more proof do we need that singing with the animal world, with nature, is bloody good for us? I'll tell you.
Yes. You hear a story like that and it just almost makes me want to cry thinking of how much there is that we just don't listen to.
I agree. I also reconcile that with, my God, we have so many other wonderful things in this world that we surround ourselves with, which we have to celebrate. We have to fight for the arts as much as we have to fight for nature. The two go hand in hand. My great belief is that, you know, I'm living in a country where the support, the financial support, the valuing of our creative industries is so undernourished. It's so hobbled. And the same with our ecologies, with our natural heritage, that it's so under-supported and undervalued. And if the two in their similar predicaments can come together and be greater than the sum of their parts in moments like this and others that other people are doing and other creatives, I'm not the only one, I believe we've got a very strong case for change and a reevaluation of what we should be doing with the time we have within the situation that we are living in right now.
And the falcon, oh, the falcon, she's a pretty bird, wonders as she flies. She asks us easy questions. We
book, especially the end of your book, was so heartening to me because, you know, we've had 2 decades of watching climate crisis develop. So it is possible today to feel a kind of helplessness and despair. And what I loved so much about your book was making the point that, you know, it's not all down to politics and economics. Culture can make a big difference. What's your line? Culture eats strategy for breakfast. That doing this, having this conversation for you, putting out albums, taking people into the woods to hear nightingales actually might make a difference. Do you really believe that?
Oh my God, I really do. I really do. Because I know that the opportunity for people to have a moment, just a moment, to sense the alternative, they're so rare. And when they happen, and they happen well, they impact so deeply that it can have a real profound effect on people. It's a collective journey we're on. We can't do this as individuals, and we can't depend on the state and government and policy at the moment. We know that we have to do this as a unified collective people movement. And I'll give a little secret away. My big moment for me, the kind of ta-da moment in the Nightingales, yeah, it's sitting with that bird and making the music, or it's the walking through the dark, but it's actually in the storytelling around the disappearance of this bird and actually pinpointing what's really happening. It's not just loss of farmland in England, it's about global heating, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, that's going to ravish their wintering habitat, rendering their migratory capabilities impossible. But it's about fossil fuels. It all comes down to fossil fuels. And the ta-da moment is going, your pensions and your banking, investing that you have in these horrific institutions that are not ethical and are propping up the fossil fuel industries, that is what's funding the disappearance of nightingales and everything else that they depend on. So there are highly powerful ways we can take ownership of our own accountability that isn't just about recycling. Yeah. It's activism. It really is activism. I do it to create enchantment, but also to create the will for change.
So you said enchantment, and that's the other, I think, really important piece, because thinking back over the threads of this conversation, we talked about this kind of nostalgia and grief that there can be in the song of a nightingale, in the awareness that this is an endling, in your awareness of the vanishing folk song tradition that you're trying to restore. So there can be grief. And yet, I think that you really have come to believe that joy is the thing that makes the change. And so I wanted to ask you just to close with this really beautiful dream you have, a vision of what things could be like. You call it the one day way, though. I think we should call it the one night way.
Yeah, I do have a dream that if we were to make one sort of day, night in the year, a sort of almost like a religious holiday, the order has shifted, the topsy-turvy, you know, that we did what we're not supposed to do. Nightingales could create an opportunity for us to go and be out in the dark at night. And that there was a ceremony, essentially a ritual around it that was not dissimilar to some of the customs or the Burns Night celebrations or some of those sorts of traditions that we have within our lives that we do because that's what we do. And this would be in honor of all those generations that did sing and play and revere nature, and that we gathered as families or friends one night in the spring and we made it our purpose to step into the dark, to seek out a nightingale in one of their reserves or somebody's back garden. And we crept through the night and created a circle and a service. We kind of held a service for the nightingale. I call these things the nightingalers, where we brought with us poems and prose, things that Shakespeare or Keats had wrote or Mary Oliver or or we had written, or a song that our grandfather used to love when he was alive, or granny used to sing, something like that. Bring in those magical things that we've gathered, and they were shared with the bird, and in the way that I do, really up close, that the bird creates the auditorium, he creates that sanctuary, and that was an annual excursion, and kids were brought into that, and they were allowed to stay up late, and we broke all the rules, and it was reverential and it was fun. And each year it would be slightly different, sometimes solemn and somber, sometimes it would be sexy and illicit and drunken, and, you know, just as long as it is done, as long as we do these things, we'll find our own way. That's a dream of mine.
What an incredible scene. I can hear three or four singing over each other. Can I just say a little bit about just keeping our voices as hushed as possible, because we're going to get really close, and it's very easy to scare them. We only have 6-7 weeks of this song, such a short period, their mating song. But they've been doing this for millions of years. Humans have evolved listening to nightingales. You know, as one of the few night birds that will really sing consistently. They're the first artist. They're our sort of the midwife, the sire to us as language and song carriers.
Folk singer, writer, conservationist, song collector, and activist Sam Lee. His book, The Nightingale, Notes on a Songbird, is on many best of the year lists, and his most recent studio album is called Song Dreaming.